It is a secular world in which we live. This means that the general outlook is governed by the fact that mankind as a whole tend to see in the temporal things of life their whole means and ends of existence. Against this point of view, Christians must stand for God and his revelation of himself in history. To assert that there is and can be no higher life than the one we know in this temporal sphere is, we believe, not true to the facts. Christianity asserts that this world was invaded by a spiritual world which is above and beyond it, and from which alone it draws its significance and meaning. Men were not born to be butchers and bakers and candlestick makers. They were born to be the sons of God. The first great commandment is that we love God with all our being, and the second, so like unto it that it cannot be distinguished from the first, is that we love our neighbor as ourselves. How do we stand before God in actual fact? If Jesus is to be believed, we each count for one and no more than one. The divine perfection is seen in the fact that he sends his rain on the just and the unjust, and his sunshine on the good and the evil. His nature is a righteousness which is perfect love, and so he purposes the establishment of justice in all spheres of life, personal, social, cultural, economic, political, and international. A decision for God involves on the part of Christians a sharp break from the secularist tendencies of our time which seek the whole fulfillment of man's life in his earthly existence. But man is free to rebel and has done so, in spite of the marvels of science and human wisdom, and what they have done in controlling his own destiny. But man cannot escape the divine sovereignty. To deviate from the divine law is to incur disaster, and such disaster comes by the operation of what scientists call natural law. That natural law operates at the divine behest, and the disasters which come upon people of wickedness are his judgments, set in the natural course in order to safeguard the creation. God has laid on man the duty of decision, and some Christian seeks to evade the responsibility by casting it back upon him, and so try to escape. Faith in God is never an escape from life or its judgments, nor is faith a substitute for hard-headed scientific thought. Our intellectual faculties are God's gift to us, for his glory is intelligence. The Christian faith must, if it is to survive and destroy the subtle influences of Marxism and secular humanism, give men a living, vital content for their faith. These influences have some element of truth in them, but this element of truth can be absorbed by an articulate and intelligent Christian faith. Karl Marx discovered nothing about men and history that was not already known by the Lord Jesus, and modern secularism may not be so new as many of its devotees seem to think. No enlightened Christian today would question the right of men of science to question and question again and again everything that is capable of being investigated. The complex problems of our present society cannot be resolved without a continuous expansion of scientific knowledge, especially in the field of social science. But we must not make the mistake of substituting the scientific approach to reality for the Christian approach. The two are not incompatible, it is true, but we make the mistake today of thinking that the scientific attitude is the only sane approach to reality. We must be thankful for the scientists and must make the fullest use of them. But their approach is only one, and it is not the most fundamental, nor is it the most important approach. The scientist sits in his ivory tower and asks questions and expects answers. He is king and demands and receives the homage due a king. But is this the way life really is? No. Let the scientist meet another person who, like himself, is king in his own world, and then the situation is quite different. In his encounter with another person or group, the scientist is no longer free to ask what he will and to order things as he pleases. Questions may be asked of him which require an answer. He is no longer the sole judge, but is himself subject to judgment. And there is a profound difference in these two approaches to reality. They are not interchangeable, and all of us are tempted at times to bring the relations between ourselves and others into the framework of the self-centered view. We can learn a lot about people by studying them medically, psychologically, or sociologically, but thus we never really meet them, and it is in the meeting of people that real life consists. Science is fundamentally individualistic, while the interplay of life is in the continuous adjustment one man makes to another and the adjustment achieved between groups. If all of us recognized this fundamental truth, it would create a quite different spiritual and intellectual climate in which to do business. Men can live in peace if only they recognize they do not know it all, and each group renounces the claim to have the final say-so. Our highest act of worship is never a flight into the alone, but a social meal, a holy communion. Among other doctrines, the truth about God is that he designs all to become his sons and daughters, and the truth about our neighbor, which is of paramount importance, is that he was designed so to become. We must cease to think alone of our relation to God, or only about our relationship with neighbor. We must think of both at the same time. The late Dr. Frederick M. Smith made an appeal for a new social consciousness in these words, quote, "Religion in the Christian sense is comprised of service, service to those in need, service to others, altruism. And this makes religion much more than meditation, prayer, and the observance of ceremonies. It is meditation become dynamic. It is prayer plus the desire to do. It is ceremony followed by action. It is meditation, prayer, and ceremony vitalized and sanctified by beneficent action in the service to others. To follow Jesus as believer, disciple, and servant, man must hold all his possessions, his life, his conduct, his attitude, and his money at the service of God, ready to utilize all in the service of his fellow men as full duty to deity. Any social order based on selfishness is fundamentally wrong. Who will deny that today the appeal for endeavor is to selfishness? In the school, on the street, in the bank, from the rostrum, in union headquarters, from the pulpit, in the factory, the appeal is largely, if not entirely, to the selfish instinct. Individuals are urged to endeavor, but for reward. Service is urged, but in the line yielding the largest returns to the individual. Professions are chosen for the prospective return, and excellence therein is striven for because larger tolls can be collected, and the struggle is to amass a competency or more, for the power brought, or for the chance for early retirement with security from worry or work. Our industry is based on the reward to self and on fear. Men toil in fear of old age and insecurity. What a travesty on the Christian religion. A society ostensibly Christian, whose industrial impulsion is fear or the appeal to self, when Christianity is based on love, love of God and neighbor." Unquote. As William Temple has amply said, a decision for sociality as the basic truth of human existence would create an outlook and temper so different from that which has been dominant in the modern era now drawing to its close as to create a new epoch in human history. Such decision will only come as mankind responds to the teaching of the meek and lowly Nazarene.